Thanks. Hey, this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, I'm wishing you the best. And we love to hear from you. You can get in touch by visiting naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and leave us your comments, your suggestions, your criticisms, whatever it is you'd like to hear. And of course, we're always available to learn more as well as teach more. We have classes available every single day because they are available either in person or online. So you could learn about how to use herbs for yourself and your family, how to use natural remedies for very specific issues. For instance, Dr. Zamperon and I are about to teach an 8-week course in autoimmunity. What are some of the autoimmune diseases? Well, there are many that I'm sure you'd recognize, such as rheumatoid arthritis and Sjogren's syndrome and lupus and, of course, many other illnesses have an autoimmune component to them as well, such as fibromyalgia. And sometimes less serious conditions as well can have an autoimmune component. But how do we decide if someone has an autoimmune component, and how do we treat it naturally rather than using some of the drugs that you might be seeing advertised on TV, such as Enbrel? They use that for autoimmune conditions, and it certainly can be useful. On the other hand, it can be very deadly. Just listen to the commercials about what they talk about. On the other hand, we have very effective herbs, and everything we're teaching is what's called from peer-reviewed evidence-based literature. So if you are a healthcare professional or you know a healthcare professional who would like to know the latest science on natural remedies to use for autoimmune illness, then join Dr. Zamperon and I. Go to naturalnurse.com under schedules, and you will see how to join us for that 8-week class. And that class also is available after we give it because it will be archived online. But it's nice if you can join us live because then you can actually ask questions and be with us live. We also have offices, various local offices in Florida as well as New York, Oyster Bay, New York. Also in Connecticut, Dr. Zamperon's medical practice is in Connecticut, and he's also available in the clinic, the naturopathic clinic at University of Bridgeport. So we are very available to help you out with your health needs. And today, we're very happy to have as our guest Dr. Ray Drury. And Dr. Drury is one of the foremost experts in upper cervical care, which is a specialty in chiropractic. His latest book is called The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare, and it talks about the methods he has been practicing and teaching for over 20 years. He has helped patients from all over the world suffering from a variety of conditions, and he brings hope and healing by addressing the cause of the problem, and that's what's so important in natural medicine, instead of just treating the symptoms. He is actually a second-generation upper cervical doctor, and Dr. Drury is one of a small group of doctors who practice upper cervical care as their chosen area of expertise. So we are very happy to have with us today our guest, Dr. Ray Drury. Welcome to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Ray.
Well, thank you very much, Ellen. It's nice to be here.
Dr. Drury. It's a little hard to say that last name.
Drury.
Yeah, but I hope I pronounced it correctly.
Yeah,
now, did you decide to put all this information into a book, The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare?
Well, you know, as you said earlier, I literally have people come to Charlotte, North Carolina, where my office is, from all over the world, from Europe, from Canada, from Mexico. And yet there are people driving right by my office every day that just don't know. You know, they don't know. With the same conditions, maybe even worse. And so, you know, it gets kind of frustrating. So I look at it as, yeah, this is the best kept secret in healthcare because it just nobody even really knows that it even exists. And you know how it is in our type of profession. We're working against the media, which is pretty much owned by the pharmaceutical industry. So anytime, you know, even all the incredible stories that we have, they don't get much airplay because, people are scared to lose their support from their advertisers. So, I wrote the book because, people needed to know, and we're slowly making an impact, and people are slowly starting to find out. So, pretty much wraps it up.
But it's not that slowly because you've actually been doing this for 20 years already.
Yeah, but you know, there's about a little over 1,000 upper cervical doctors in the United States. And they really all should have a waiting list, you know, of people to get into their practice. And it's just a lack of awareness. So I've been doing it for 20 years and I've been blessed. It's been a great ride and I'm pretty well known, but mostly in the Charlotte area. So we just need people to know what we do and how it affects the body. And that's really, we're trying to keep it no longer a secret, I guess.
Well, we will certainly talk about your specialty, but in your book, you give a background as well. For instance, talk about a brief history of chiropractic, and that's not something everyone knows about. Perhaps you'd like to share that with us.
Yeah, you know, we joke around and say chiropractic has gone all the way from helping someone who was deaf to becoming back pain doctors. Which is kind of going backwards, but back in the late 1800s, a man by the name of Harvey Lillard went to a guy named D.D. Palmer. Harvey Lillard was a janitor, and he'd been deaf for 17 years. And he was cleaning up the building where D.D. was working, and they started talking, and writing notes, I guess, explained to him what had happened was he kind of heard a cracking sound in his head or in his neck, and he lost his hearing. And he'd been deaf for 17 years. And so Didi at the time was a magnetic healer, using positive and negative poles to try to, you know, bring energy into different parts of the body. So he laid down, he felt around on his neck, and he found a little bump in his neck. And so Harvey pushed on that bump a little bit, and the bump moved, and it made a popping sound. Well, nothing happened. He thought, well, you know, popping the neck originally took your hearing. Maybe popping it again will bring the hearing back. Well, 3 days in a row, he did the same thing, and after the third time, Harvey Lillard's hearing was restored. So D.D. said, I've got the cure for all deaf people. So he had deaf people coming to Davenport, Iowa, where he was, from all over the world. And some people got their hearing back, some didn't, but some other people that had, I think the next guy had kidney disease, and his kidney disease cleared up. And, guys, people with heart problems, their heart problems cleared up. People with digestive issues. So that's when he first found the correlation between the spinal column, which houses all the nerves that go through the body, and the nervous system. And if the spinal column gets out of line and you can realign it, then it should, you know, allow the nervous system to function normally again. So that's kind of where it all started.
I just want to share that my sister is a chiropractor, and she went to Palmer College, which bears the namesake, you know.
Yeah, Fountainhead.
So she was very interested in that, too. Now, thank you for sharing that. So basically, chiropractic care has been around, you know, really quite a while. And also, people, I don't think, realize that that was the start. That's very, very interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
A lot of chiropractors have kind of, you know, back and neck pain, you know, 70% of the population at some time or another have back pain, right? So it's an easy niche, and, you know, it's a lot of chiropractors have kind of allowed themselves to be put in that little hold. But, you know, we have the opportunity and the potential, if it's done right, to help a much wider range of conditions. And for me, that's a lot more fun. It's a lot more of a challenge to be able to help people with things beyond back and neck pain.
So, well, definitely, and you even talk about in your book the fact that it was also used for psychiatric care.
Yeah, so Dean's son, B.J. Palmer, actually opened Clearview Sanitarium, and he took only way you could go there was if you were referred by a medical doctor or chiropractor. And he took the local psychiatric hospital who, when they failed, they would send their people over there, and he got 50% of their people better from psychiatric issues with no drugs, no medications. BJ used to say if he could go in the jails and adjust people, that most of those people there were subluxated, which means they have incoherent thoughts produced by a misalignment at the top of the neck. If he could adjust them, that their thinking would be normal. I mean, you think about some of the stuff that happens nowadays. You can't be normal to commit some of the crimes that have gone on the last 20 years.
That's true. Now, I wonder, you know, I know there's always been a political discussion about sort of interfering with chiropractors being able to function rather than embrace it when it is such a phenomenal intervention and drug-free.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we say it wasn't the candlestick makers telling everyone to go out and buy a light bulb. So I think
that's a good one.
So, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is they're brainwashed, for one, in medical school, that the only way to help anybody is drugs or surgery. And, you know, obviously we know otherwise. More and more, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I do have more and more medical doctors, more of the younger guys that do refer to me now more so than used to be. But I tell you what they do. They would tell their patients, now I wouldn't send you to just any chiropractor, but this guy, he's a specialist. That's the only reason I'm sending him to you. So, you know, they're opening their minds a little bit, you know, but they still kind of have their caveat about whether they actually would ever, you know, refer to a chiropractor.
Which is
you
point out right in your book also that the physician, surgeon, and co-founder of the Mayo Clinic actually brought his wife to B.J. Palmer for adjustment. So, you know, a lot of medical doctors and medical professionals also come to chiropractors, especially when the drugs and surgery don't work.
Oh, I've had many medical doctors as patients. And, you know, and one of them actually brought me in his son and his wife, and they all got better. And the wife asked me one day, she said, has he referred you anybody? And I said, no, he hasn't. He's the head of cardiology at one of the largest places in Charlotte. And she said, well, she said, I've been on him, and he just keeps saying, he goes, you know, if I referred people to them, that all of his colleagues would you know, give him a hard time about it.
Oh, well, we have
like,
to outgrow that, I think.
No doubt, you know. I mean, really, it's about the people, right? I mean, if it's not, then I don't think you're in the right profession. But, you know, he comes in and gets adjusted. Of course, nobody knows who he is or what he does, but, you know, he keeps himself and his family straight. But it's like the pediatrician that you know, pushes vaccines but doesn't vaccinate their own children.
Yeah, right. That's an interesting point. Now, you certainly specialize in a particular chiropractic technique called upper cervical, and I'm very fascinated by the fact that you're a second generation. So does that mean your dad was also an upper cervical doctor?
No. Kind of an interesting story. So, you know, my dad was a chiropractor. And when I went to chiropractic college, you know, he taught me the body's a self-healing organism, doesn't need any help, just can't be interfered with, it's all controlled by the nervous system, blah, blah, blah. Well, I saw people in my dad's office that, you know, some got better, some didn't. You know, neck pain, back pain, headaches, pretty much 98% of them got better. But some people would have allergies, some people would have asthma, some people would have digestive issues. Some got better, some didn't. And so when I started chiropractic school, I was like, this thing is it either works or it doesn't, okay? It's either 100% or it's not at all. You know, I'm going to prove this to myself that it either, you know, I'm either all in or all out. So I was kind of on a search, and I actually found a doctor at a seminar. I overheard him speak, and I talked to him afterwards that did this upper cervical work. Went down and spent a few days in their office and saw the results were incredible, stuff I'd never seen before. You know, people with paralysis that were, you know, able to start moving their limbs, and alopecia were growing hair, and I mean all kinds of crazy stuff. And I was like, this is really makes more sense to me, and there's a way to check it and find out if you need, you don't, you know, you don't adjust every visit, a lot of that kind of thing. Well, so bottom line is I wound up learning to do it, moved to North Carolina where I opened my first practice, and my dad really didn't like the idea of me doing upper cervical because he was a general full spine chiropractor. But when my youngest child was born, she's almost nine. In June, she'll be nine. I just opened my newest office, and I was very proud of it. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of upgrade every time, and this was like, to me, the, you know, my dream office. So my dad and my mom came down, took them down to my office. My stepmom was also a chiropractor. My dad got into chiropractic 50 years ago because of low back pain, sciatica, prostate problems that were there chronically all the time. Well, the chiropractor gave him some relief. So anyway, he was at my office, comes over, lays on one of my tables, and my tables aren't designed to do general chiropractic. It's kind of tall, more for leg checks. And says, my mom, hey, come over here and adjust my low back. My sciatica shooting down my leg, my back's killing me. So she comes over, she goes, this table's too tall, I can't do it. You know, get ready to do it. I'm like, look, I haven't done that since I was in school, and even then I wasn't very good at it. I'm like, you're in my office. Do it my way. My dad's like, oh, what are you going to do? Adjust my neck and fix my back. And I said, well, come over here and let's see. So I checked him. I found he definitely had a problem in his neck. I took some x-rays. I found the problem. Adjusted the first bone in his neck, the atlas bone. In our office, we have a rest area. You lay down 15, 20 minutes. Got him back up. Afterwards, checked him again. And we have an instrument that tells me if we got it or not. Line was dead straight perfect, which means the bone couldn't be any better position than it was right then. And I was prepared. I was like, well, you know, I was thinking, I was getting ready to say, well, Dad, you know, now with time, you know, your body will start to heal. And he looked back over his shoulder, expecting some smart aleck remark. He's like, I don't know what the heck you did to me, but my low back pain and the pain down my leg is gone. I'm like, oh, so then, of course, I was like, well, of course, you know, well, that's kind of how we roll. That's what we expect, you know. Well, so that night, he comes downstairs. He stayed at our house. And he says the best he had slept in 5 years. 2 weeks later, he calls me, says digestive issues he's had for years have cleared up. So my dad decided after being in practice for some time that he was going to convert his office over to strictly upper cervical. So I spent the next 9 months teaching him how to do it, and he basically converted his practice completely over to one bone.
Dr. Ray Drury, thank you for that story. That's a fantastic story. So you're saying you're a second-generation cervical chiropractor. Kind of happened in reverse.
Exactly, yeah. I'm a second-generation chiropractor, but he's a second-generation upper cervical doctor.
That is really a wonderful story. And how about to this day? Are you both practicing upper cervical now?
Yeah, he's in Kentucky. Okay. I'm in North Carolina, but that's where I grew up. I was raised in Kentucky. So.
Wow, that's a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing it. Now, when you focus on your work, something that you're always looking at is, regardless of where the pain might be manifesting in the body, it might be from a source that's similar, rather than being localized, like you just talked about with your dad.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, I joke around people, you know, when they come in, they're like, but there's nothing wrong with my neck. Pain's in my back or down my leg. And I'm like, okay, well, you step on a dog's tail, where does he bark? Right? So the problem could actually be at the other end, but it's manifesting itself in the back, in the leg, in the feet, in the knees, in the hips, you know, a wide range of areas. So
it certainly may still be linked to the cervical, even if it is not necessarily manifesting as pain in the neck.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, most of my patients don't necessarily have neck pain, but they might have migraines, or they might have digestive disorders, and they might not be sleeping good. Because the brainstem, spinal cord doesn't have any pain perception. So you could have a bone out of a line in the neck, could have been there for 40 years without necessarily having any neck pain, but it could be just squeezing. Like on my dad, when I checked him, we have a little instrument that tells us it was almost off the chart, showing me that there's serious nerve pressure there, and he didn't have any neck pain at all. So that's
it was very long going. It wasn't something that just happened.
Right. No, his problem had been there most of his life.
Wow. So, you know, thank you so much for all that information. What we're going to do here is going to take a short break. And I do want people to be able to find you. So a good place to look is www.dr, for doctor, Ray, R-A-Y, Drury, D-R-U-R-Y.com, www.drraydrury.com. And, of course, today's show, like all our shows, will be posted and archived on Progressive Radio Network. So you'll actually see in writing with a little link how you can get in touch with Dr. Drury. And, of course, but talking about his practice and his latest book, The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You're listening today to your host, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And we love to hear from you. You can actually find us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or You can email us through Facebook, or you can go to our website, naturalnurse.com. And thank you so much for listening. We've been watching our downloads of our podcast and noticed that it's over 113,000. That's a pretty good number, and we like to keep going with that as well. So thank you so much. And we're hoping that you'd love to join us in person as well. We have a lot of trips going on. We have one where we go to Chinatown and spend the day in Chinatown, New York. You're welcome to come along with us there. And we learn about Chinese medicine. We do Qigong in the park. We go to a Chinese museum. And right now we are taking registrations for our next Chinatown trip. We do that twice a year. And it's filling up, and it always gets, you know, it always closes out, let's say. So you may want to register for it, and then if you don't come, you can save your registration for the next trip, as a matter of fact. We also have trips to the island of Jamaica, where we live with indigenous healers for a few days, completely off the grid. And it's a fantastic experience. You also get CEU credits for professionals by attending that trip, and we have that trip every March. So you can look at Echo Tours for Cures, or again, come through naturalnurse.com and take a look at that trip. We have a lot of photos of past ventures out there, and I think this is about our 26th year of doing that trip, our 27th year of doing the Chinatown trip. So we have a lot of experience in making these things occur and having people join us and enjoying it. And, of course, we have ongoing classes in herbal certification where you take classes with us. We have some on ground coming up at the Restoration Farm. You could look at their website, Restoration Farm, a beautiful farm that's in Old Bethpage, New York. So you can join us for any of those things. And today we are happy to have as our guest Dr. Ray Drury, and he is one of the foremost experts in a specific chiropractic technique called upper cervical care. He has also been in private practice for 20 years and has received numerous awards and recognition for his continued devotion to the upper cervical profession. And he has a reputation as one of the most experienced doctors in this particular clinical technique in the world. He has patients coming to his office from all over, flying in, and he is also the author of the book we're talking about today, The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Ray.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you explained to us a beautiful story about your dad actually coming around, who was in a chiropractor for many years, and he came around to finding that this particular technique was so special as well. And you were telling us that, you know, there's a lot of health problems that seem systemic that can be addressed by upper cervical technique. So why don't you tell us more about some of those?
Well, so to give you an example, I've had some people come from Italy, and one of them had multiple sclerosis. And there's so much we're learning about the top of the neck and everything that happens there. We've always known about the neurological component, about the interference between the brain and the body at the level of the brainstem. B.J. Palmer invented an instrument that later became part of the precursor to the EEG called an electroencephaloneuromotempograph. And what it did was it measured the mental transmission from the brain to the body, and he found that between the brain and the body, there was this one place that transmission could be interfered without having a gross pathology, disease, you know, a tumor, broken bone, dislocation, and that was at the top of the neck, and that was after 16 years of research. So this guy came in from Italy, had multiple sclerosis, came over in a wheelchair. When he went back 3 months later, he was walking without his wheelchair, and he went back to his multiple sclerosis doctor, who asked him what the heck he'd been doing. And he wound up, he told him where he went, he got this upper cervical work, and he talked to another medical doctor there in Italy, Dr. Mondolesi, Sandro Mondolesi, who's a well-known researcher. in multiple sclerosis. And so he contacted me, and he came over here in the U.S. and visited my office, talked with some of the patients, and anyway, they started a research study that took, each patient was only seen for a period of 6 weeks, but there were 77 patients, and at the end of the 6 weeks, all 77 patients noticed improvement. Every single one of them noticed improvement. And most of it, surprising to me, was the mental improvement, mostly. Cognitive, perceptive abilities improved 70 to 80%. A lot of motor improvement, stuff like that. So what their theory is Zamboni, this doctor, came up with a theory on MS that multiple sclerosis was caused from venous congestion. And the idea is the top of the neck, if the bone is rotated when it misaligns, it can interfere with the drainage of blood from the brain through the carotid vein. And when that's open, then the blood flows normally. So that's a whole other aspect that we hadn't even considered, we've considered but haven't really seen as far as the blood flow to and from the brain. Obviously, if the blood flow to and from the brain is interfered with, the brain doesn't get proper oxygen, doesn't work as well as it ought to. So back to your question, that's just, you know, multiple sclerosis. We see a lot of people with fibromyalgia. Migraine headaches are usually something that responds really quick, really direct. It's kind of very causal right there at the brainstem and the nerves that control the blood flow to and from the brain.
Now, if somebody had migraine headaches, usually it's intermittent, and sometimes we see links to various factors such as in women, their menstrual cycle, such as in barometric pressure change or eating
Absolutely.
Particular foods. So
yes.
Those triggers still involved, but then there's also some kind of congestion in the cervical area?
Yeah, so this is what I believe. So when your body is weak, okay, any little bit of stress goes to the weakest link. And if that bone is out of line in the neck, barometric pressure, maybe even stresses in your diet, work stress, even hormonal stresses, right? Those are all stresses. Even though on a normal, healthy person, it's a mild stress, something that's probably not even noticed. If you have a severe, if you have a misalignment at the top of the neck, it can become a very weak link. And so what happens with, what my experience is if somebody comes in and they have migraines, at first, there's a whole list of things that can trigger them. But if you can correct the position of that bone and get it to stabilize, and what that means is get it to stay there, okay? So we have a system to make sure. Most of the time when you come into an upper cervical office, majority of the time you won't be getting an adjustment. We're going to monitor it, and we're going to keep an eye on it. And if we're not getting the bone to hold and stay there, we're not doing our job. So our objective is to adjust you as little as possible. As it stabilizes, it gets stronger, the same stresses will not have the same effect on you anymore till eventually you'll get beyond the stressors to where you can endure those stresses without actually triggering a migraine. Does that make sense?
Yes. So basically, now if somebody came in and you would decide that this is not the day for an adjustment, what other kind of care would they get, or would you say come back next week?
Nothing, exactly. Sometimes, so if they come in, we check them, say your adjustment's still holding, you know, then what will happen is we gradually, as their adjustment holds longer, their body tells us they need us less, we stretch their visits further and further out. I have people that can hold it, you know, that come in once a year that are just maintaining, and that's just to kind of keep them in good shape. You know, in the beginning, it's a little more intensive, you know. Maybe they'll hold a day or two or three or four, and then what we'll find is they'll start to hold for several days, and then they'll start to hold for a week, and they'll start to hold for several weeks, and they start to hold for months. So that's really the key to what we do is a lot of times I think, you know, chiropractors sometimes maybe over-adjust because, you know, if you don't have a real system to know when to and when not to, somebody comes in with a serious problem, and you adjust them, you know, the body can heal the problem. But if they come in and they don't need to be adjusted and you adjust them, then you could obviously potentially cause problems.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. So that would be over-adjusting when they really don't need it, and maybe there's just a time in between to allow the body to rest.
That's right, exactly. So I think the one thing that really solidified my interest in the upper cervical work was the idea that there's always we have an objective tool to determine. You need it or you don't. And sometimes people come in and they'll feel like crap and they'll be like, oh, doc, I'm feeling horrible. And I'll check on them like, you know what? Your adjustment's still holding. It just takes time. You know, your body's healing. All I can do now. And you know, in the beginning, you're early in practice. You're kind of like, God, I feel like I need to do something. You know, and I screwed up. I've taught myself the lesson over and over again that, you know, it's always better. Less is usually best. So,
now, I know that you treat many different problems. For instance, people come to your clinic all the way in Charlotte, North Carolina. I guess there's not much you could do sort of online or over the phone with patients. That really actually has to be a hands-on kind of intervention.
For the care itself, yes. But I will tell you while we're on it that we've kind of come up with a little kind of a home test to kind of check yourself to see if you might have a misalignment in the upper neck.
Oh, that sounds...
Yeah, it's kind of cool, and it's probably about, you know, 90%, 95% accurate. If you do have any one of the findings, then you're probably 99% chance that you have a misalignment in the neck. What happens is so we have this reflex, it's called the writing reflex, and the whole purpose is to keep the brain straight, level, balanced with the ground at all times, okay? And a lot of times that's why structurally you'll have changes through your spine, you'll see people kind of bent over, you'll see different compensations going on. This is your body's attempt to keep the head level at all times. If somebody has a head like their head's way out in front of them, a lot of times what's happened is the atlas is dropped down and it's forced the head to lean forward, and so to get the head level again, it pushes the head out in front of you to try to balance it again. What I'm leading up to is if one of the bones in the top of the neck misalign, it'll cause the head to go off balance. So the spine will change, compensate till the head levels. It'll sacrifice the musculoskeletal system in an attempt to balance the brain. So a lot of times people come in, like we were talking earlier, they don't have any neck pain, but their back's killing them, or they got hip pain or knee pain or all these other musculoskeletal conditions. Well, it's because their weight distribution has been switched, and the body's no longer symmetrical. So fighting gravity, now it wears out one side faster than the other, and muscles become, you know, overworked, and they get tired and fatigued. And so back to the test. That was just kind of leading you up. So if you look in the mirror, what happens is if the bone goes out of line, it causes the head to lean one way or the other. Now, the eyes will help your body balance the head, forcing the changes through your spine. So you have three mechanisms that tell the brain where it is in space: fluid in your ears, mechanoreceptors in the head and neck, and your eyes. So if you look in the mirror and you close your eyes and then you turn your head to the left slowly, back to the middle slowly, then to the right slowly, back to the middle. Keep your eyes closed. Now, as soon as you open your eyes, I want you to look at your earlobes. When you look at your earlobes, you'll see if you have earrings, it's actually even easier. If one ear is a little lower or higher than the other ear, then immediately drop down, look at the shoulders. Is one shoulder a little lower or higher than the other shoulder? Now, if you have somebody with you at, you know, they can check you, even better, go lay on the bed with your feet hanging off and have them put your shoes together, your heels together. It's easier if you have like a flat heel, and see if one leg is pulled up shorter than the other, meaning one heel looks like it, they don't match up evenly. Those are all really good signs that your body has compensated for something going on in the neck and caused your body to change. So it's a really good indicator that there's probably something out of a line in the top of the neck.
Well, that's interesting that you share that. You know, I studied with a doctor, you probably heard of him, Dr. Van Rump, who was a chiropractor who used directional non-force technique, and he did use measurements of the feet as an indicator.
Right.
That's really wonderful thing that you share. And so you explain how people can do that in your book.
Yeah, if you close your eyes, that takes out the eyes, the eyes' ability to change, you know, to adapt. So you, when you close your eyes and you look immediately, it's the body hasn't had time to unwind again, right? Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
It is great. And a chiropractor who I'm friends with has in his office something that helps people understand how important what you're talking about is in terms of how your neck will hold your head. Because he just has people put on their hand a bowling ball, and then they shift it one way or another rather than straight up and down, you can just feel how your arm will try to move to keep that thing in place, if it's a little forward or a little back. And people don't realize that your whole spine, your head is sitting right on your spine and has to be maintained. And what you said is overcompensation could definitely come into play.
No doubt. You're exactly right. And the head weighs 10 to 12 pounds. So, you know, just a slight little shift changes all the biomechanics of your whole skeletal system, trying to balance that head.
Well, you know, Dr. Ray, we're going to take another break right here because we like to give other shows right here on Progressive Radio Network, which is such a fantastic station. It is absolutely has the best content if you're interested in natural living, not only natural health like we do right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but politics about what's really going on behind the scenes. The best place to be is Progressive Radio Network. And another wonderful thing is that you can listen anytime, day or night. And that's where we get all those downloads. Like I said, over 113,000 downloads. And some of the shows on Progressive Radio Network even more than we do. So therefore, tell your friends, because we're in a little competition here, get the most downloads. And, of course, we love to have our live listeners as well. Join us every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We will be back with more right after you hear from Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned. And welcome back once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today we have as our guest Dr. Ray Drury. We're talking about his new book, or I would say his latest book, The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare. And if you look through this book, you see this. A lot of very, very interesting chapters. We talked about a brief history of chiropractic. He talked about why cervical chiropractic, his specific technique, is different than general chiropractic. And also the fact that it was embraced early on in Europe. Why don't you share that with us, Dr. Ray?
So it turns out that, so the first person, I had somebody come over. My wife's family is from Italy. Her mom grew up there, and so they've had some family come over, and they stay a week or two. And while they're here, a lot of times they'll get checked and x-rayed, and they've had some pretty cool health, you know, responses. Well, so they knew what I did, and they had a friend of theirs. She was 50 years old. She was diagnosed with cerebellar ataxia and dystonia. And all the specialists in Europe, they'd been around. She's a former Miss Italy beauty queen.
Wait a minute. And I have to stop you right there, Dr. Ray. You need to tell us what those disease words are about. Not all our listeners will know that.
Okay.
Dystonia.
So, yeah. Dystonia is kind of a lack of tone in the muscles and different parts of the body. A lot of times it's most frequently in the neck, but it can be in the extremities, and they just get hypertonus, meaning they get very, very tight and stiff and will totally lose coordination. And the cerebellar ataxia is basically the cerebellum part of the brain. They lose balance. They lose coordination. A lot of them have, she was in a wheelchair. Her fingers were all gnarled up. Her coordination, like if you put something on the table, she'd try to pick it up. And her muscles were so tight and jittery that she would knock things over and really had very, almost no fine motor skills. And basically, the specialists in throughout Europe that they took her to all basically said, you know, take her home. She's going to be dead probably 2 to 3 months. So
wow.
They called me and they called me and they said, yeah, it's pretty bad at 50 years old. So they called me and they said, you think you can help her? And I said, well, you know, I mean, they already gave her a death sentence. Surely we can do better than death, right? So they brought her over, and it was definitely a God thing. The first adjustment, she slept through the night. The next day, she was 70% pain-free. So we started, we kept on working with her, and about the end of 3 months, she was walking, and her hands opened up, and she, her speech was no longer slurred. She could talk normal. So she went back to Italy, and, you know, Italians like to talk. I'm married to one I know, which could be good if you're trying to build a business. I wasn't necessarily trying to build an Italian business, but that's what happened. So next thing you know, I had a four-year-old that was vaccine-injured, was completely paralyzed. We started adjusting her. She could get to where she could stand on her own. She could feed herself. She was finally got out of her diaper. So all pretty cool stuff. So ultimately, I wound up with 18 people that came over, stayed in a hotel. A lot of them had death sentences. The little girl was, again, the other one's supposed to be dead in 2 or 3 months. I had some ALS patients, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, stuff like that. So at the end, while several of them kept asking me, so what do we do now, Doc? You know, we're doing better. We know we need to kind of maintain. We need to get checked periodically, you know. And I'm like, you guys just fly me to Italy once a month. We'll check everybody, you know. But ultimately, they were like, you know, if you could come over and open an office in Italy, you know, your office would be full because there's nobody over there that does this. And so ultimately that's what happened, and what turned out, I actually wound up opening 4 offices over there. Every single one of them were in hospitals. We would go there. I would speak a lot of times.
Wait a minute. I want to investigate that statement a little bit. So actually they allowed you to open a clinic in a hospital where there's mainstream medicine going on as well.
Absolutely, and it was amazing to me. They were very open armed. I mean, not just the hospital administrators trying to make money, but the medical doctors. I really got, you know, every now and then you'd have somebody, but it was just an ego thing, right? And this is something different, but majority of them would like really, start sending me patients. I mean, 90% of our patients were direct medical doctor or hospital referral to our offices there. They were in the hospitals. And so most of them were medical doctors. They would come and they would watch, and they, you know, I actually had several of them ask me if I would teach them to do it, which I couldn't. But a lot of them, you know, but they were very interested and they were very open to it. You know, I wound up partnering with a medical doctor. I opened one by myself, and then another medical doctor came to me, and he partnered with me to help me open the other 3. And then, you know, with this multiple sclerosis research, which is coming out of peer review right now, it's actually been peer reviewed. It should be published within the next few weeks, I guess. You know, it'll probably really open some doors. But, yeah, it's a totally different world outside the U.S. You know, I mean, just it was great. I mean, I spoke at the hospitals. When we first got going, a lot of times what they would want to do is they'd bring several medical, 40, 50 medical doctors, hospital administrators, you know, into a room, and I would explain what we did, and they would ask a few questions, and, I mean, it wasn't a debate. It was like, man, this is pretty cool. This is great. This is awesome, you know. And then I'd go to lunch. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said that's really how it should be, because there should be cooperation among healthcare providers.
Well, it would make all of our jobs so much easier. You know, I mean, I have a lot of people that are loaded up, over medicated, you know. And I mean, I had this weekend I had a medical doctor at the house, and you know, and she was telling me, she was like, you know, the problem is that we're in is that you can get in trouble if you give somebody a medication, you can get in trouble if you don't give somebody a medication. You know, it's like we're scared, we don't know what to do. We have people that, you know, some people that now they demand medicine, so you feel like you need to give them something when actually you know they don't need it. And then there are some people that, you know, you don't think that they need it, and if you don't give it to them, they can sue you for not giving it to them. You know, it's just, they're in a tough position as well.
That's true.
Yeah. But if you have people working together, you know, then if we work together and say, you know, hey, I don't think you need a medication, let's talk to Dr. Drury and see what he thinks. And then we come down, I check him, I have a way to determine, you know what, no, I don't think you need a medication. I think what you need is to try to get this problem corrected, the cause of it corrected. You know, if we could work together, we could, you know, and then there are people that come in, I could say, you know what, you do need a medication. You need to take this, you know, that kind of thing. So we should be able to work together instead of, you know, off on our own little islands.
Wow. That's a fantastic thing. So how long did that go on with you going to Italy all the time?
Well, I don't go so much anymore. There's still offices over there, I'll probably be going back in the next 6-8 weeks. But when this research comes out, that's going to be huge.
And that's what I want to focus on next, because, you know, we're getting towards the end of our time together here, and I'm always very interested in research because I am an instructor in medical school, and I often present mainstream medical audiences. I'm giving a class on autoimmune disease coming up, an 8-week course that's very medically oriented, but naturally oriented, but based on evidence. So tell us about the research that's coming out.
So, like I said, it's 77 patients, and they did very specific analysis. We did measurements of the x-rays, what we found, the consistencies with the findings of the misalignments of the top of the neck. We have an instrument to correct. Ultimately, it was only a 6-week course, normally, or a 6-week care plan, and the idea was to try to get this, the initial study completed. In my office, if somebody comes in with an autoimmune condition, it's like the nervous system is convince the immune system that it has to attack itself. I usually won't accept that case for less than 3 to 6 months, depending on severity. This was only 6 weeks.
Bob, that's right, yes.
Yeah, so this was only 6 weeks, but the findings were still, you know, I've never heard of a research like this that had 100% of people involved noticed improvement. So 100% felt better. Now, there were different variations. Some had better motor movement. Some had more cognitive abilities, perceptive abilities. The highest improvement overall was the brain functions, which is pretty awesome. So you figure if it's affecting the brain, ultimately that'll filter down to the rest of the body, probably needing a little bit more time or a little more, you know, long-term improvement for the other, the coordination and motor abilities and stuff like that. But it should be, it is peer review, and it was done with Sapienza Medical School in Rome, and it should be published any day now. It's kind of hard. You can't step on toes with those guys. They get a little when it comes to dates and times.
What journal that's to be in?
It's a European cardiovascular. I think it's the surgery. Let's see if I can.
Oh, that's great, though. So it's actually going to be on PubMed.
Yes. Yeah. It's a cardiovascular surgeon journal, something like that. It's a European journal. I can email that to you. Have it offhand.
Right. In your book, you do talk about, in fact, other research. And is there a lot of research on cervical intervention and how helpful they may be for various conditions?
Well, you know, there was a really big blood pressure study done Chicago Medical School. And it showed within a 6-week period, a 17-point improvement in blood pressure, 17-point drop. Which is equivalent to $2 billion drugs, according to pharmaceutical company. So that's a pretty big difference, and that was only in a 6-week time frame as well, 17-point
drop. Right, so it sounds
drop.
Like they could use more funding to look into the verifiable, which there is quite a bit of verifiable research on the use of this technique, and remember, it's 100% drug-free and no adverse effects. So that is great.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. We're hoping that this MS study will kind of help us open some doors, too, because this shows a whole new side of it, the whole venous flow, you know, the vascular side of it. So that's the problem is, you know, one of the problems with chiropractors, especially upper cervical doctors, is they're all kind of little islands. We get in our little practice. We do well. We have fun. We help a lot of people. But there's not a large organization for research purposes. And that's one of the things
I'm hoping
to try to change.
I'm going to have to stop you there because we're actually out of time. But I want to thank you for being our guest today. Let me remind our listeners, we have been interviewing Dr. Ray Drury. That's Drury. His book, The Best Kept Secret in Healthcare, talks about a lot of the things you can hear about this show, and you can tell your friends they can listen anytime on the archives right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we'll also have his contact information, www.drury.com. Until next time, we're so happy to have you listening to us, and this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, we're hoping that you stay healthy.